Asia Pacific currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. Good morning and welcome to another episode of Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR. I'm Giselle Hannah.
And I'm James Barry.
We're taking you through to 9:30 this morning. Of course, in the second part of the show, I will be speaking with Shivani Kaur, who is a labour movement activist based in New Delhi, actually, speaking about the labour codes, the introduction of the labour codes, which were introduced in November last year. But, of course, during the month of February, we've been seeing some massive strike action in that country. So we'll be talking about what is happening with the consolidation of those labour laws and what it means for workers. Of course, Asia Pacific Currents is brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. You can find us on the web, all the ws.aawl.org.au. We are on Facebook and Substack, so look us up on those social media platforms. But of course, first up, news from around the region.
Beginning in Turkey, on Sunday, Mehmet Türkmen, the chair of the United Textile Weaving and Leather Workers Union, or Birtek Sen, was detained by the gendarmerie during a raid on his home. The raid was in response to a speech he had given at a protest by workers from Sertimahalla, a carpet manufacturer in Gaziantep. These workers stopped work on March 9 due to their company not implementing pay increments for several months, being late in wage payments and having not paid the workers for the entire month of February. Speaking at the rally, Türkmen outlined the workers' demand, that they just want their wages paid on time. He highlighted the threats workers had received for asking for their pay and demanded that compensation be added to late payments. The owner of the company then made a complaint against Türkmen, who was then detained on allegations of inciting the public to hatred and hostility, and he was formally arrested through a court order on Monday. His arrest drew significant backlash around Turkey, with several labour organisations calling for Türkmen's immediate release.
Domestic workers across Telangana state in the south of India held public meetings and a postcard campaign last Saturday demanding that the state government introduce a dedicated law to protect their rights. Female domestic workers assembled across the state to call for the introduction of the Telangana Domestic Workers Bill. The mobilisation was organised by the GUTS, G-U-T-S, a grassroots trade union of domestic workers that's been running a long campaign for a law to protect the rights of nearly 1.1 million domestic workers in Telangana, most of whom are women from marginalised communities, including scheduled castes, tribal groups and ethnic and religious minorities. The workers face many challenges, including low and irregular wages, long working hours, lack of social security, and the absence of formal legal recognition of their work. Workers are calling for a bill that would guarantee minimum wages, regulated working hours, social security benefits, and workplace protections.
In Indonesia this week, three suspects have been arrested following the assault of two journalists, which took place on the 9th of March. The journalists were reporting on a tin mining dispute between residents and local authorities on islands off the coast of Sumatra in Indonesia when they were attacked and detained at a warehouse of the sand mining company PT Putra Prima Mineral Mandiria. They had arrived at the factory to report on the dispute but were denied entry. When one of the journalists began filming, he was punched multiple times in the face. Another journalist was seized when he attempted to flee. After being physically assaulted, they were then detained for over an hour, receiving death threats, and then intimidated into recording an apology video. Their phones were confiscated, and they were forced to delete their recordings. The journalists were then taken to hospital by intervening police. Both journalists suffered injuries, with one spending 3 days in intensive care. The journalists' union, AJI Indonesia, condemned the attack and urged authorities to take swift action to ensure that the perpetrators are held accountable.
as the United States and Israel continue their war against Iran, including Israel's attacks on Lebanon. Unions are highlighting the ongoing targeting of workers. On Tuesday, Public Services International condemned the killing of at least 31 health workers in Lebanon since the beginning of the war on the 2nd of March, citing at least one incident where a primary healthcare centre was targeted by Israeli strikes. The Lebanese Hotels Association, a trade union representing the accommodation industry, has been mobilising measures to protect its members after several hotels were hit by strikes. Journalists have been facing threats of imprisonment across the region, including in Israel, the Gulf countries, Lebanon, Iraq, and Iran. Most of the workers killed in strikes on oil and gas facilities and transport have been migrant workers. The International Trade Union Confederation issued a statement on Friday calling for an immediate end to the war, highlighting its illegality under international law.
Pakistani workers had a major victory this week after the National Industrial Relations Commission ruled that the management of the Capital Development Authority in Islamabad cannot outsource key departments without consulting the recognised collective bargaining agent, the CDA Mazdoor Union. The ruling reinforces the legal authority of the union and strengthens the role of collective bargaining in decisions affecting thousands of public sector workers. The union had challenged attempts by management to outsource, without consultation, several directorates, including sanitation, water supply, environment, and security. The Capital Development Authority employs around 13,000 workers across multiple directorates, and the outsourcing plans would have directly affected a large portion of this workforce. The court ruled that management was not acting in accordance with Pakistan's industrial laws. The decision comes at a time when outsourcing and privatisation pressures are increasing across public services in South Asia. Trade unions have repeatedly warned that outsourcing often leads to precarious employment, lower wages, and weaker labour protections.
Last week, the Korean Confederation of Trade Unions held a rally on the first day of the Yellow Envelope Act's implementation, with the chairman of the KCTU telling attendees to not be complacent, as despite the improvements of the law, employers and the government are still unprepared to take responsibility. In particular, the KCTU argues that companies are likely to ignore aspects of the new law and the government will be reluctant to hold them to account. On the first day of the law, the KCTU demonstrated its organisational capacity, mobilising 140,000 workers across 900 workplaces to initiate collective bargaining rights under the new law. Despite its reservations about the implementation of the new law, the KCTU have announced that they see it as an opportunity to increase union membership, which hovers just above 10% nationally. The KCTU, which represents around 1.1 million workers, has set an internal target of reaching 2 million members. All power to the arm of the KCTU. 8 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. Some community announcements and then our feature interview for the morning.
Come to the Degrowth Festival on Sunday the 22nd of March from 11 a.m. till 7 p.m. Building community and resilience. Let's create the world we want by practicing it now together. Sing, dance, picnic under the trees, and check out the dozens of stalls, workshops, and talks. The 2026 Degrowth Festival, Curtin Square, Carlton. Search for Degrowth Festival 2026 on Humanitix for more details and to register. The Degrowth Festival is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, the voice of the community.
3CR, community radio, giving the voice to the community since 1976.
It is 9 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. You're listening to Asia Pacific Currents with Giselle and James. Our feature interview for the morning is Shivani Kaur from Migul Bastur Dasta. She'll introduce herself about the new labour code in India. Here is that interview.
I'm Shivani. I'm a political activist based in New Delhi, India. I'm part of a workers' organization called Migul Mazdoor Dasta. And I'm involved with various trade unions in and around Delhi.
So to begin with, can you please explain what the labor codes are?
Yes. So, you know, the labor codes and the talk surrounding introduction of labor code has been there for a long time. And I won't say just in 2014 when Modi government assumed power and, you know, it came to power. It's not just since then that they've been hell-bent upon, quote-unquote, reforming the erstwhile labor laws. But since 1999, when the earlier BJP government was in power, the Vajpayee government, Atal Bihari Vajpayee-led BJP government, which was a coalition government, even since then, since 1999, there were a lot of discussions around changing the existing labor laws framework in India. So, for example, in 1999 itself, there was a second National Labor Commission, which was constituted by then Vajpayee government, and it came up with a report in 2002, and it was a very long 1700 page report, which actually talked about dismantling the all kind of protection that the working class in India used to get with the erstwhile labor laws framework. Now, it's nobody's case that the earlier laws were, you know, pro-labor. Nobody's saying that. And when we are opposing the implementation of labor codes also, we are pointing to the fact that obviously they were insufficient and they were actually applicable only to a very small part of the working class in India, which was organized working class, the employees, which were, you know, which are employed in the formal sector of economy. So most of the informal sector and most of the organized workers in formal sector as well, they did not automatically fall within the purview of the erstwhile labor laws themselves. But the fact is that even when these laws were there, there was a fair bit of chance then that when workers organized under the banners of their unions, when they collectively bargained and struggled, there was a chance that they could have got something implemented in their favor. And this has happened. For example, I, being a labor activist, and I have worked with so many trade unions in India, especially around Delhi. So, for example, there was a strike by unorganized sector workers in the steel industry in Delhi itself, which were unorganized informal workers. But when they struggled, when they collectively came together and, you know, launched an agitation to get these laws implemented in their favor, to a large extent, they were able to do that. But now with dismantling of this earlier framework, what Modi government has done, you know, in the name of reform, in the name of, you know, rationalization, in the name of simplification of old labor laws framework, it is actually now bending backwards, you know, to actually help the capitalist class in ease of doing business. So what does this ease of doing business actually mean? It means that all those provisions that were available in whatever measure, in whatever degree, and one can contest that too. But yes, whatever protections and whatever social security benefits, whatever legal guidelines there were there earlier, they have been dismantled. So now, you know, what was, you could say, a de facto reality for most of the, for the majority of the working class in India has become a de jure reality now. Because now the contract system has been legalized. Now the right to strike, right to collective bargaining, you know, this right that is actually enshrined in the constitution of this country, it has been criminalized. Now, you know, under the guise of national floor level wages, capitalists are free to, you know, not pay minimum wages.
I want to ask about the number of strikes that have happened since the Labor codes were announced. There's been quite a few since November, since the law's introduction, and a recent national strike in February. Can you tell us a little bit about which groups are striking, what their demands are, and tell us a little bit about workers' mobilisations in opposition to the laws and also the cost of living crisis?
Yeah. So, Giselle, what I want to point out is that now, yes, there was a one-day strike call, which was given by the central trade unions in India, which are, you know, backed by most of the social democratic parties. And there are some independent central trade unions as well. Now, now this one-day call was there, and these one-day national strike calls have been given since 1991 itself. So since 1994 itself, there have been 30 one-day or two-day national strike calls. There is a limitation to these one-day strike calls. The first thing is that now we have witnessed these strike actions taking place, but we have seen that the neoliberal assault by the bourgeois states, and I'm not just talking about the fascist Modi government. Before fascist Modi government was in place, there were other governments as well. And the onslaught of these neoliberal regimes on workers' rights has been there, and it's for everyone to see. Now, having said that, we have this experience behind us where we have seen that these one-day calls don't work anymore. Now, the governments also know that, you know, this one-day action is going to happen, and this will be, you know, compensated by making workers work overtime in the coming days. So the one-day thing doesn't work at all. And the reality of the one-day strike is that even on these one days, it's too nominal. It's too, you know, you can say ritualistic. It's not there. It might sound very pessimistic, or people might point out the fact that even now when the, you know, Modi government is attacking, and it is one of the biggest, the biggest attack on the rights of the working class, you know, since independence. We accept that fact. But the kind of resistance and the kind of action, the kind of militancy that this kind of attack demanded is totally lacking. And our organization was at the forefront of running these campaigns, because we found out that, you know, a large section of the working class does not even know what is there in the labor code. So the workers need to be educated. There is a general sense of apathy among the unorganized sector workers. So we need to approach them and tell them and educate them and inform them about how dangerous these labor codes are going to be. So, for example, when we were running this campaign since 21st November, last 21st November itself, we saw that, you know, there is a sizable chunk of workers who don't understand the dangers that these labor codes pose. And then there is another segment that knows the dangers, the risk, the, you know, the hazardous nature of the labor codes, but they are at sea, because even they are saying that we approach our union leaders, we say that we must go into some kind of militant action, but that sort of, you know, call is lacking. And then with this campaign, we actually appealed to all the central trade unions that you should take lead. Don't limit the action to one day ritualistic ceremonial strike call. Turn this one day call, transform, convert this one day call into a call for indefinite general strike. And that is the kind of weapon that working class must employ at this moment, because obviously, to overcome this sort of attack by the fascist government, we need to resort to the measures that are of extreme nature. And with this campaign, we got to know that obviously there is a large-scale discontent, but even, you know, these workers who are organized under the banner of these central trade unions, they don't know what to do. And it's true that spontaneously there have been many strike actions, not, you know, heeding to the call of any central trade union, but spontaneously. For example, especially the gig workers in India, and we must salute their militancy. They are in an embryonic stage of, you know, forming their unions.
There was a lot in that. I guess my question is, how do we get the masses of workers to take up the call that you just said? I mean, you know, the idea of an indefinite strike is not easy to coordinate, yet you're of the view that that is probably what it will take to overcome these labor laws.
Yes, obviously it's easier said than done. And we know that, you know, there are a lot of challenges that one faces in organizing that sort of concerted, coordinated action. But the fact still remains that the initiation has to be done at the behest of those central trade unions that are active in most of the organized sectors, and that can, you know, even if they leave apart a call of indefinite, because that is the positive proposal that we are giving, but even if a call of a strike action for at least 1 week or 15 days, or earlier they were saying we'll organize a call, of a strike for 3 days, but then that sort of call did not come up. What we witnessed was a one-day call. So I know that there are going to be challenges, but what are we waiting for? Obviously, we used to say, and most of the central trade unions used to say, that it's a big weapon of the working class and it needs to be used as at an opportune time. But what could be better opportune time than the time that we are facing right now? We are in dire straits right now. And we must also put into perspective that obviously there were farmers' unions that actually did something of that sort. I don't agree with the demands that these farmers' unions were raising, for example, the demand for minimum support price. I don't agree with it. But the kind of action that they initiated was sort of an indefinite strike. They were there, they were, you know, at the borders of Delhi, and they did not go back. That sort of action was there when the farmers' unions actually, you know, opposed the three farm laws, launched by the Modi government. But why that sort of action is lacking here, when we know that this sort of assault is unprecedented, and nowhere in the history of independent India we have witnessed that kind of, you know, assault on the rights of the working class.
Shivani, I mean, you've made a very good case for why there needs to be movement and action. I guess my question is, without any of the forces that you described, what do you think is the future of these labour laws and the situation for workers in India under them?
Situation is, you know, pretty bad, because as we discussed, for example, now right to strike, right to collectively bargain, they have been made too difficult. Secondly, for example, in the name of increasing working hours, because now the labor, these labor codes, for example, one of the labor codes categorically mentions that overtime can be done over by any, you know, workers can be made to work overtime without mandatory payment of the overtime. So it's kind of forced labor that workers are being forced to do now. Also, with the fixed term employment, there is this provision under the new labor codes where contract system has been given a legal status, and it was there informally. This had been happening especially in the automobile sector in India, where fixed term employment was there, but now it has been given a legal facade as well. So for example, FTE, the fixed term employment, again the national floor level wages, which does away with the mandatory provision of ensuring that payment of minimum wages is done. And it was a criminal liability earlier. If you don't pay, I'm not saying that everywhere it was implemented and, you know, capitalists were put behind bars. That was not happening earlier also. But at least there was a provision where if you don't pay minimum wages, you attracted criminal liability. Now that has been done away with. So I believe that with these labor codes in place, obviously things are going to be difficult. Obviously, strikes are going to be, organizing strikes are going to be difficult. Getting a trade union registered is going to be difficult. And contrary to, registering a trade union, registering a factory has become extremely easy. So now online, a factory owner can make an application and, the labor inspector, which is not just an inspector now, which has become an inspector cum facilitator, it can just, without any inspection, without going on ground and checking whether all kinds of provisions are being, implemented, it can just give the registration online. But for registering a trade union, things have been made extremely difficult. So obviously things are going to be difficult, but the other side of the coin is that after these labor codes have been implemented, we are also witnessing spontaneous strike actions, militant strike actions by workers also. Now, what needs to be done is to bring this element of organization, element of consciousness within these spontaneous, working class actions. But that is also happening. Because obviously, if we must not forget that the labor laws served dual roles. They were the regulatory framework as well, and obviously the workers fought hard and made governments recognize these rights, but they had a regulatory role to play. Now, if you just do away with all kind of regulation, then obviously things are going to take radical shape. They are going to take a militant shape, and that's what we've been witnessing for past two and a half months, what gig workers have been doing, what unorganized sectors workers have been doing. But having said that, the element of consciousness, the element of organization is needed, and still we believe that these labor codes, a concerted effort needs to be built where these labor codes should be challenged. And we must, and for example, our organization and our fraternal trade unions, we are still going ahead with these campaigns where we are not just educating the working class, but also putting forth the idea that a militant action needs to be still asking. We are still appealing to these central trade unions that it's not till late. We can still initiate some sort of, a concerted, a coordinated effort where these labor laws could be challenged in a big way. So obviously, right now, it's a fact that the forces of labor are on a back foot, but still, with these spontaneous working class actions taking place, it also gives us a ray of hope that if, there is a proper element of organization, proper element of consciousness, which is introduced in these spontaneous struggles, obviously things are going to get better. So, but yes, the labor codes in the first place needs to be challenged, and we must make efforts to compel the government to take them back.
That was Shivani Kaur from Bigul Mazdoor Dasta, a trade union organisation in India, in New Delhi. And she was talking about the new labour codes that were introduced in November last year that have seen some pretty significant strike action across February. But of course, Shivani is calling for indefinite general strike action. I think that is a necessary demand, but an incredibly difficult thing to achieve. That does bring us to the end of another episode of Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR. Thanks for tuning in. Coming up next is Palestine Remembered, and we will be back next Saturday with more news and current affairs from the Asia Pacific region. But for now, that's it for me, Giselle Hannah.
And me, James Barry.